Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, I've got Greg Hopin, a British national who wrote this fabulous book called The British Devil. It's about love, culture, religion, a binational relationship, and two hot men. Hey, good evening, Greg.
Good evening, mate. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I never tell anybody how I'm going to introduce them. I always want to get that laugh.
Well, that was a charming introduction. So that was very good. Thank you.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. I love your little accent. This whole week, you know, of course, the entire country is glued to the television set watching the Olympics, and I'm sure
I know. All I get is Ryan Seacrest.
I know. I don't watch it on that channel. I watch it on the computer. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's right. British people do have sexy voices. You have a terrible sexy voice. Okay, the British Devil. It's a semi-autobiographical novel, and I've chatted with you a little bit before the show. Tell us what made you write this book.
Frustration. More than anything, I think most gay people have situations or issues in their lives where they have to overcome something, whether it be a family member who isn't 100% supportive, or whether or not they're in a long-distance relationship with maybe somebody out of state, or don't ask, don't tell. There's so many different things that, you know, gay guys have to deal with. I was just unfortunate that I ended up with a lot of them.
Right.
And the longer I stayed in America, the more I found out about it, the way people viewed the gay community. Excuse me. And it just got to the point where it was driving me insane. And I had something to say, and I said it.
Good for you.
And that's pretty much what the book is. It's my story, but it's my view on it.
Okay. Well, let me clue the listeners in on a little bit more of the details. We're not going to give the entire plot away, but it's about a young, handsome British national, also named Greg, who falls for a handsome young American naval officer named Danny.
That's true. He is handsome.
Okay. Of course you are. All British people are handsome, and all Navy people are handsome. I mean, give me a break. And what soon starts this wonderful relationship, first don't ask, don't tell comes in, of course, then immigration, and then the Southern Baptist mother-in-law. So you have three things on top of being gay, three other factors. So you have four factors pulling in all different directions, and you would think this book would be very complicated, but it does flow very simply. Even though Greg has said it was out of frustration, it seems more like a romantic comedy.
Well, sometimes it felt like it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about an outside reader. I'm talking about the reader at 30,000 feet. If I'm looking at this, I live in a gay ghetto. I live in one of the gayest, highest population areas in the country. You're in Washington, D.C. tonight, is that correct?
Right? I am, yes. Yep.
Okay, another place where, you know, things are a little bit different, but the 90% of the country isn't like Southern Florida or Washington, D.C. or New York or Berkeley, California. And
no.
you actually captured the real America. I've lived it. My partner is also from Texas, and that's like dating a person from a third country. tell us about your first impressions when you went to Texas.
Well, I actually met my husband, who Danny is based on, in the Middle East, because he was a naval officer. He was based out there during the last Gulf War. And I used to work for an airline, and I used to go over, and we used to, you know, meet up, and I'd stay with him for, you know, weeks at a time. So I thought I had an idea of what Texas was like, because my husband told me all the things to expect.
Mm-hmm.
told me about his background, told me about his childhood, told me about his family, mm-hmm. about the culture. It was those nights where, you know, you lay in bed and, you know, you talk for hours and right. you get to know each other. But although everything he said was right and true, mm-hmm. actually being there mm-hmm. is very, very different.
Yeah.
How the so? People... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, how so?
First of all, the gun thing terrified me. Absolutely terrified me. I wasn't, even though I know that they carry guns, and which isn't uncommon, but to me, where I come from, England, and we don't have a gun culture.
That's correct.
So just sitting in traffic mm-hmm. to me, whereas if somebody cut me up in traffic in England, I'd be out the window screaming at them.
Right. You don't do that here.
In Texas, I'd be thinking, I'm just gonna.
Right.
Stare forward because they might have a gun and they're going to shoot me if I flip them the bird.
That's correct.
So it was just kind of, I didn't feel particularly safe there because of I kind of knew what their attitude was like towards mm-hmm. gay people. And this sounds like I'm putting everybody in the same category. It's obviously it's not all like that. But the smaller towns, they tend to wear their religion and their politics on their sleeve.
Right. Yeah.
And I wasn't entirely sure how to act around them, so I was kind of a bit jittery
mm-hmm.
for the first few times I went to Texas.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine. I have been there. I also found that. By the way, I just looked it up. There are three times as many guns as there are people in Texas. You are right. They do keep cabinets full of them. I just looked it up on the internet as I play here. But one of the things that I did notice in your descriptions of your first visit to Texas was, of course, you were nervous. You were being looked at the first time, whether you were heterosexual, homosexual, or anyone. The first time the in-laws, give a gander at you, you're going to be very nervous. But one of the things that I noticed that came up very, very quickly was religion
mm-hmm.
in your book and in these people's lives. It was very, very important. How big a shock was that to you coming from your background?
I went to a Catholic primary school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
We maybe went to church on a Sunday once in a blue moon.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, I didn't come from like a religious background at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't sound quite right because I went to a Catholic school, but the school for the district.
Right, I understand.
So just saying grace around a table was bizarre to me.
Uh-huh, right.
And it was all very sudden.
Right.
And it was how, what's the best way of putting it? You could tell that they were devoted straight away from the first meal.
Okay.
It wasn't something that I was kind of eased into. It was a sudden... clasping of hands around a table and speaking to God.
Right.
Whereas to me, I'm still looking at the menu. It was just bizarre.
Right.
To me, I don't get me wrong, that it's part of their culture, but for me, it was just
mm-hmm.
strange. It was strange.
No, I understand. But also, it didn't seem that it was just the holding hands, but... The questioning of your religion was what I was surprised about.
Oh, because, I see.
Yeah, it was not just their exhibition of it. It's that they asked you very quickly, and I wonder how that really.
Again, from where this sounds like I come from another planet. From where I come from, your religion and your politics are quite a personal thing.
Correct.
Whereas in places like Texas.
Right.
You'll have a bumper sticker with, member of the NRA
right.
and, the Texans for Christ, or right. So it. I guess in their way, it wasn't so much of an issue just automatically asking me, because they broadcast right. everything themselves.
Correct.
There was kind of no consideration in this, that it would be something that was personal to me, because to them, it was simply the way things are done. I mean, I didn't need to ask the question of half the people that I met in Texas, purely because I could read everything off a bumper sticker.
You're exactly
I didn't
right.
need to know.
Yeah. It's that way in Florida also. When you even in the gay community, there are, of course, you know, everyone's got their little rainbow flags and stuff like that on there. But, you know, there are bumper stickers on cars that tell you they're, you know, whether it's Obama or Romney or the Tea Party or Sarah Palin's mm-hmm. wonderful, or, you know, Romney's a pig, or whatever it is. It is very much, you don't really have to ask anyone. Because
no. But the thing is that they say, you know, pro-life, pro-gun.
Right.
I believe in Jesus, da, 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 da. And then right at the end, it's like, and my child's an honor student.
Right.
And you go through it all, and you're like, I don't really need to meet you now, because I know everything right. about you.
Right. Right. And there is a false friendliness in the South that it doesn't exist in the North. You haven't really been to the whole, but there are a lot of people like that in the North, Northeast, and North Central. They're a little different, but they're not as, I call it phony friendly. I think the South has the key on phony friendly. I'm going to get phone calls now if I say that, but that's okay. But let's get back to your book. That was most fun. Gay writing is kind of an interesting thing. I was talking a little bit about before, and one of the reasons I think you're going to do great in writing is that you have a voice that is very confident, that is very secure. It doesn't sound like you've been in therapy forever, and you're not using your therapist's words. Self-esteem and all the psychobabble books, things that I have to read. My listeners all know that I'm married to a psychiatrist, and I try to stay away from all of those words because I hear them all day long. and when you read many books, you feel like you're in a therapy session sometimes, but this is not the case with The British Devil. So
no, not at all.
It's a wonderful, wonderful read, and I want to just make a little bit of a plug right now. It's called The British Devil, Greg Hogben, Hogben. It's available on Amazon.com. It's on the e-reader and in trade paperback, and so it's The British Devil on Amazon.com. That's probably the best way to get it as quickly as possible. Okay, I did that. So,
thank you.
I'll be doing it one more time. I have little notes here. So tell me. Promoting your first book, how are you doing it?
Well, I've only the book's actually only been released since last Monday. I've been blessed with some fantastic reviews so far.
Mm-hmm.
I've also started writing for Huffington Post's Gay Voices.
We're going to talk about that next. Well, don't go ahead.
And pretty much just trying to get out to the book fairs and perhaps writing other articles for
right.
some of the gay press.
Right.
It is difficult as a new writer, because obviously
right.
people are spending hard-earned money
right.
on
right.
books. And
correct.
if they've got no reference to your work
right.
before, they're taking a chance. So you have to kind of pop
correct.
Yourself out there.
Right, and there's no indication on your book cover that this is about cock or hot, steamy sex. It's a love story, boys and girls out there. It's a love story. So you have to, like, read the book. There are no pictures. There's graphic descriptions, but no pictures, okay? So you're fine. No,
there's pictures on my Facebook wall.
Okay.
Filthy, dirty pictures.
No, there's not. It's a great read, and we had a lot of fun. I speak to a lot of authors, both established and fresh out of the pen like you, and they're all using social media. They're putting up websites, Facebook, Twitters, and you're right. The book fairs and getting around to the gay press is great. It's a different world, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I've been incredibly lucky because my publisher, Dream Spinner Press, have been amazing.
Uh-huh.
And not only that, because they've got so many established authors there, they've just been, I can't thank them enough, because they're the ones that I've been able to turn to get the advice uh-huh. on what to do next.
Okay.
And how the process kind of goes on. But if I had been an independent publisher that perhaps I hadn't been or didn't have as many authors, I think it would have been a hell of
right.
a lot more daunting experience. But Dream Spinner uh-huh. have been amazing.
Good, good. And that's a dreamspinnerpress.com, case, because everyone out there is going to be a writer, right? It's available.
Yes, that's dreamspinnerpress.com.
Okay, I've got it in front of me. Okay, so let's go to the Huffington Post. I laughed my head off. I did not even know it was you that was writing it. For some reason, I was just like flipping around Gay Voices and Huffington Post. As some of the listeners know, Huffington Post is the it's owned by AOL. It's an online e-zine. Gay Voices, I believe the editor is Michelangelo Signorelli, is that correct?
Yeah, the editor-at-large is Michelangelo Signorelli, and the editor is Noel Mickelson.
Noel Mickelson. And so I, in the middle of the Olympics, I'm reading How to Woo a Gay Brit. And then, you know, about two paragraphs into it, I go, who wrote this? And I go, he's going to be on the show in 2 weeks. So I was like so excited. What made you write that? That was like,
oh, mate, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea why I wrote that.
I mean, that was so funny, because here you are, a married guy, and you're watching the Olympics, obviously. That was your motivation, I believe. That's what you said the motivation was, or the weeks coming up.
Yeah, no, it wasn't so much that. It was more I've been following so much of the Olympics.
Right.
And where they cut away and they start explaining the story of the host country and the
uh-huh.
eccentrics and the eccentric people and the bad teeth and everything like that, I was rolling around on the floor laughing.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of what was driving me to write it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I must admit, the response I had from that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Oh my God, it put you on the map. I mean, it really did put you on. And we read. I mean, if you go to Huffington Post and then how to woo a gay Brit. I think you just put that on Google and you'll get that's your title and it will come up. Oh, it does. It comes up immediately. How to woo a gay Brit. You don't even put your name in, and you're famous. Somebody else has been Googling you. And see what happens with this country. I mean, it's a very curious place, but it does work. Isn't that amazing?
It does work, indeed.
Isn't that the strangest thing? I mean, we are a curious lot, but I mean, we get away with so much. I have no idea how. But anyway, so I had a great time, and it's a tongue-in-cheek essay on how to be charming and delightful and woo a gay Brit from another cultural view, because many times we don't know the gaps in culture and the little things that we say and do that North Americans do that are mildly offensive, sometimes crass, and sometimes just damn confusing to British people, and I'm sure it's a vice versa thing for many of them.
It is. I mean, like I said, it is very, very tongue-in-cheek, that piece.
What with that title, How to Woo a Gay Brit. I mean, first of all, you're going to lose about a third of the country because they don't know what woo means.
Well, the other option, they would have taken it out, what the original heading was.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, anyway, that's funny. I know I had an interview the other day with somebody, and he said the word, he was feeling wan, and I said, you know, you're going to have to translate because this goes out all over the United States and people don't say that word wan. He was from Australia. But anyway, we do have fun with this. Anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit about the conflicts that you created. Actually, they were created for you, since I believe this is semi-autobiographical, and you put all the conflicts into one book. The four conflicts being, you know, a gay couple. That's already an uphill battle, and I would say most of the world, at some point, to some extent, there's still homophobia, even in the most liberal countries. You're talking about getting involved with somebody in the military, in the United States military. This is before Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. Even though that part was repealed, there's still quite a bit of that law that that is still in the books, where there's no equal housing, equal pay, equal benefits. So the military is not an equal place in the United States.
No, not yet.
You threw in immigration, which is a U.S. immigration nightmare, which is completely unfair, not only to gays, but to most people in this world. U.S. immigration is.
I've lived under DOMA for the last 8 years.
Oh my God!
And it is. Again, it's the comparison. If it was the other, if my husband goes to England, he's accepted and given his visa and his NHS at a moment's notice. Whereas here, I have to keep returning to Britain to fulfill my visa requirements, and it is incredibly unfair because I am separated from my husband over it. Hopefully next year, with any luck, it will be resolved. But after, I think that's probably why the book is. It got to be funnier because everything just got so out of hand, and we were just dealt so many bad cards.
Right.
Just from the fact that I love my husband, and it just created almost. It was almost like a Monty Python sketch where just a very long drawn out one.
Right, where everything goes wrong, you got a flat tire, and then you ran out of gas, and then, I know, I understand. And then, and it starts raining, and mud falls on your head, and then you got dinosaur bites you or something. I know. And then, of course, you have your mother-in-law, who's trying to break you up with her manipulations and deceit and out-and-out lies. And so you have these four, between the immigration, the Defense of Marriage Act, being gay, being binational. All these things are just, would be tearing people apart, and you'd think this is going to be this novel of angst and despair and resentment and victimization. And I am using those words, yet I never felt them when I was reading the book. I expected to, reading the synopsis on the back. But no, it's a fun book. You have an incredible voice.
Thank you very much.
You have an incredibly great sense of humor about this all, because I know a lot of people. I live in South Florida, and binational U.S. immigration issues are huge. We have a lot of people who are partnered with people from Latin America, South America, and they have the exact same problem that you have, of course, because there is no it's not the exact same problem, because they can't even go back to their countries and be openly gay, and some of them are from countries that are not. They actually could be exiled, but no, it's a little different in the South and Central American Caribbean.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of the reasons why I didn't bang on about it too much, because even though it is a real pain in the ass that we are separated and we have to play this ridiculous game, I'm also not from a country that doesn't have a visa waiver program or a B-1, B-2 visa program. And I do have the luxury of going backwards and forwards. So, again, that's why it's probably not so much of a downer in the book, purely because I know that situations are worse for a hell of a lot more people than they are for me.
Sure.
My circumstances are, I was lucky enough to be born British, and it was a little bit easier.
Oh,
but the whole DOMA thing needs to be sorted out yesterday.
Oh, yeah. No, I've spoken with several authors that have written books and lived through some of these things, and they've all, gone over the nightmares of even after DOMA. Some of them are living in some of the issues in the post-DOMA world, where they do have a partner, but there are, they don't get the housing benefits, they don't get the financial benefits, the health benefits, things like that. So there are some horrible inequities still on those books, and that won't go away until DOMA is taken away, and probably we have universal gay marriage, because marriage equality. I'm learning all my words I'm supposed to use. I'm not supposed to say gay marriage. I'm supposed to say marriage equality. I've been corrected. Yeah. You've called it many times. But yeah, I don't think anything's going to. Even then, it's going to take many years for the rest of the country to truly accept what's going on.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I do agree with you there. But at the same time, I honestly think, I mean, when I first met my husband, this is 8 years ago, we didn't think that that Don't Ask, Don't Tell and all these other things that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The pace that it's changing is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
To actually watch it. But again, I was kind of, before I met my husband and I was living in England, I was in my own little bubble. I didn't really...
Sure.
I didn't follow American politics.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I had no reason to be honest with you.
Sure.
But now, obviously, I pay attention to it, and it's fascinating to watch.
Right. Oh, it's totally different. It's like a circus. I mean, and I'm watching it from... I'm 62 years old, and I'm watching it from when it was very calm and boring, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, and now it's a circus, but it's a very hateful... hateful circus, and as a gay person, I feel very affronted by this. I mean, even this. I mean, can you imagine this chicken thing going on in Great Britain? No.
No. But this is an argument. It's a heated debate that me and my husband have all the time. I see Michelle Buchman, I see Sarah Palin and Brian Fisher and Maggie Gallagher and all the nom lot. And I listen to them and I'm laughing.
Right.
Seriously, I'm laughing. And my husband's going, but Greg, and I'm going, people cannot believe what they're saying. I refuse to believe that many people actually believe what they're saying.
They do.
Is the truth. Or that they're, this whole thing with Brian Fisher about the Underground Railroad get kids out of gay parents. I sit there and I just think, you've got to be kidding me. There is absolutely no way on God's earth that people are sitting there believing this pile of crap that's coming out of this guy's mouth.
Well,
but my husband has to keep reminding me, Greg, people believe it.
They do believe it. And I wouldn't have said that until I moved to Florida. So I didn't live in the South until 12 years ago. And I do see people around me that are like that, not in my little bubble, but when I leave my little bubble. The farther north you go in Florida, the farther south it gets, and it is very much like that. And those people do worship these people. You go into restaurants and bars, and they only have Fox News on.
Mm-hmm.
They do not have anything on, and that's all they listen to. They do not read the paper. They do not. Their education level is pretty low. We have a very low literacy rate in the country. I don't know if you knew that.
But what gets me, even if they are watching the Fox News, is that, you know, just with everything else that goes around them in everyday life, or even on the television, that it's like they're being hypnotized.
Right.
And it's like they've left themselves. And as I say, I don't really need to think for myself because I've got somebody doing it for me. And again, I laugh at it. I shouldn't laugh at it, but I can't tell you the amount of times I've said to my husband, I refuse to believe that people are listening to this and paying attention to it.
Okay. We're going to change the subject because we're down to our last minute here. And I want to ask you, what's next for Greg? What are you doing next?
The next book is kind of a sequel.
Uh-huh.
Well, I say it's kind of a sequel. It is a sequel to The British Devil. It's called The Penance of Mrs. Taylor. Which kind of rounds out the story.
Sounds good. And what would you say? I've got all these questions. I never stop. You can tell that. What would you say to a new writer, a brand new writer that is starting out, that walks up to you, says, "I love your book. Sign it. Tell me about this." And he asks you, "What do I do now?"
Don't give up. Don't give up. It's easy to give up when you've got that many. You know, you've got that many books going onto the market. It is easy, and you read the reports and you go into the internet, you say it, you put it into Google, how do I publish a book, and there's a million people telling you how difficult it is.
Okay.
Ask questions. Ask people get in contact with authors that you've okay. read or that you follow. Ask the question.
We have 10 sure. seconds. Thank you so much, Greg.
No, thank you, Nate. I really do appreciate it.
The book is
It's been an absolute pleasure.
The British Devil, Greg Hogben, and good night from Fort Lauderdale. Good night, Greg.
Good night. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.